is the CBS News Weekend Roundup, a wrap-up of the week with background and analysis from the correspondents who cover the news. And now from Washington, here's CBS News national correspondent Dan Rabib.
Back in the headlines, the Clintons, former President Bill and New York Senator Hillary.
I did not have any involvement in the pardons that were granted or not granted. I'm just very disappointed about my brother's involvement.
Disappointed, she kept saying at the news. Her brother, Hugh Rodham, was paid to broker some of the Clinton pardons. We'll have more on that. And the huge tragedy in the sport of auto racing. We'll hear CBS News reporter Jim Crisula in North Carolina on the death of Dale Earnhardt.
How many more of these big-name drivers can the sport lose before it just does itself in?
And low-tar cigarettes labeled light. CBS News correspondent Scott Pelley will tell how smokers think they're safer.
What's the truth? The truth is, it doesn't make any difference what type of cigarette that you smoke.
But first, what looks like a scandal here in Washington. You might call it Pardongate.
I have never seen anything like it. You just show up every day, and here's another story for you. And the story today is better than the one yesterday. There seems to be no end to it.
CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Bob Schieffer.
We have this extraordinary news conference in which Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton announces that she has no information on anything. At one point, she said, look, if you want answers to questions about these pardons and things, you have to ask people who have the information, and that leaves me out.
CBS News Correspondent Phil Jones has questions about Hugh Rodham, a Florida lawyer.
Did he end up talking with Mrs. Clinton? She says no. Did he end up talking with the former president?
What possibly could be wrong legally? I mean, even possibly. Hugh Rodham is a lawyer. He's authorized to be a lobbyist.
There's probably nothing legally wrong here. Of course, if there's any way that you could find that the money ended up in Bill Clinton's hands, then possibly this could end up in some criminal proceedings. But there is a question here of ethics, and that is the whole smell test. And for a guy, Bill Clinton, who spent all his time worrying about his legacy, his presidential legacy, for this to come up now is just disastrous. And the one who is really hurt is Senator Clinton, Mrs. Clinton. Here's her brother, getting $400,000 at least, lobbying for these two guys to get them pardons. No indication that this was going on. And why would Hugh Rodham get such a sweetheart deal? Well, the answer's obvious. Because he was connected.
And how do President Bush and his team view this? Here's CBS News Chief White House Correspondent John Roberts.
Well, you know, Dan, certainly they're looking at this, and the official line is that they want to move on. They've got other things to concentrate on. There's a couple of schools of thought, though, at the White House. One is that the longer President Clinton looks bad and the lower his approval ratings go, the better the Bush administration looks by association, even though they may not be actively encouraging continued bashing of the president. The other school of thought is that the longer this goes on, the more involved in it Congress becomes, the more distracted they become from President Bush's agenda, and it reaches a point where you get diminishing returns. I think that President Bush would like to see that Congress is concentrated on moving forward the Republican agenda, working toward putting his pieces of legislation through the approval process so that he can get some of his campaign initiatives passed. He needs to have an early victory, and the longer the Clinton controversy hangs around, the longer it may take him to get that victory.
When you and other reporters questioned the president on Thursday, he seemed pretty pleased, or so he said, with how things are going so far in terms of bipartisan support and pushing forward.
Well, certainly he hasn't stepped in any big potholes yet, but I think that he would like to see things move along a little more quickly on a couple of fronts. You know, he's got his education plan that's beginning to make its way through Congress, but there's a good chance that the voucher part of that program will be rejected. He is including money in his upcoming budget for an immediate helping hand for prescription drugs, but it's very likely that that won't get passed. So he's had a few victories. He's got some hurdles that he has to leap as well. Perhaps the biggest of those will be to get enough votes to pass his $1.6 trillion tax plan.
His speech to Congress scheduled for this coming Tuesday evening, that's considered a big deal?
This is where he's going to set the course for his administration for the next 6 months, if not the next year. This is his chance to reach out to across both sides of the aisle to say, here's where I'm going to take the country, and I hope that you're all going to come along.
The FBI was embarrassed to announce the arrest of one of its own, senior agent Robert Hansen, whose job was to catch foreign spies. He allegedly sold secrets to Russia for 15 years. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer went to see retired FBI agent David Major, who was Hansen's boss, now a consultant on counterintelligence. Major says money is not the only reason for treason.
People don't do it because they're happy. They're trying to change their life in some capacity. Then each individual has their own reasons that they can rationalize it in his mind. And it will take time to begin to answer that for Bob Hansen.
How unusual is it for a turncoat, for want of a better term, to approach the other side and then remain anonymous through the whole operation?
Most people who become agents for foreign intelligence services are volunteers. That's one thing that Hollywood never gets right, that usually these people choose to do it on their own. In almost every case I have looked at, that's what that person really did. Even people that get recruited allow themselves to be recruited. No one is ever blackmailed into doing this. So it is a private decision made by the person who's choosing to become an agent. Now, there are some examples in history where the intelligence service did not know the agent. And I can completely understand Bob, knowing him, knowing how smart Bob is and how much he knew about how the FBI operates, of why he wanted to not even let the KGB or the SVR know his name. From an operational security standpoint, just looking at that, you'd have to take your hat off to him because it was well done. But you still know that once they got wind of it, the FBI could even solve that case.
You know, Mr. Hansen, were you surprised when you found out about this?
I was shocked because of the family man he is, because of what he stands for, because of the many private conversations we've had. I guess my first reaction was almost like being felt like I got kicked in the stomach.
Now, FBI Director Free has described the damage as exceptionally grave. Translate that for us. What is the damage?
It's not just human sources. It's the FBI's capacities and capabilities to do counterintelligence. It's technical operations. It's technical operations run by the U.S. intelligence community.
It's been written, and a number of experts have said that the FBI needs to do more polygraphing, more lie detector testing of its agents on a more widespread basis.
There is no magic bullet for this. There is no single thing you can do. Eternal vigilance, commitment to counterintelligence. This does not prove that the FBI or counterintelligence is broken. It's not. If there was one person who would know exactly how the FBI would catch a spy and therefore what techniques they would use, it would be Bob Hansen.
Robert Hansen could face the death penalty, though prosecutors suggest life without parole is more likely for this 56-year-old father of six. Coming up, the death of racing star Dale Earnhardt.
Stay with us. The CBS News Weekend Roundup will be right back. Now it pays even more to play at Pechanga Entertainment Center.
Pechanga, your favorite place to have fun.
Join the Pechanga Player Rewards Club and get cash back, food, and prizes for every dollar you play.
It's your lucky day
when you pick the best place to play.
It's just an easy drive.
It helps you come alive. You were born to have fun.
As a Rewards Club member, you also receive exclusive free offers and bonus cash, as well as extra benefits and special events. You'll be amazed at how quickly you earn thousands of points. Now it pays even more to play at Pechanga. Come see how rewarding fun can be at Pechanga Entertainment Center, located just off I-15 in beautiful wine country Temecula. Visit our website at Pechanga.com.
Come join us for rewarding fun at Pechanga.
It's Sit and Sleep's President's Week sale going on now, with premium queen size sets selling elsewhere at up to $5.99, now just $3.87.
Hold it, Larry.
What's the matter, Irwin?
I demand a recount.
A recount of what?
Those prices, they're way too low.
But Irwin, during Sit and Sleep's President's Week sale, premium queen size sets from Simmons, Sealy, Serta, and Spring Air selling elsewhere up to $5.99 are on sale for just $3.87.
Larry, I may be a certified public accountant, but I can't certify prices like this.
But Irwin, low prices are what Sit and Sleep's President's Week sale is all about. Plus, with your good credit, pay no deposit, no interest, and no payments for one whole year, get a free bed frame and free local delivery.
Larry, are you going to raise these prices or not?
No.
Well, that proves it. My vote doesn't count because you're killing me, Larry.
Visit Sit and Sleep or call 1-800-675-3536 and order by phone. Sit and Sleep will beat anyone's advertised price, so your mattress is free.
This is KNX Los Angeles.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Stories that matter with the inside knowledge of the correspondents who cover them. Once again, here's CBS News national correspondent Dan Levine.
What a sense of tragedy for NASCAR racing fans.
He was what racing was about. He's going to be missed a lot. Nobody can take his place. He's racing with the Angels now.
Dale Earnhardt Sr. died in a crash on the last lap of the Daytona 500 last weekend. People are still talking about it, that's for sure. CBS News reporter Jim Crisula, you went to Mooresville, North Carolina, which is thought of as Earnhardt headquarters.
This town of 15,000 people, about 25 miles north of Charlotte, calls itself Race City, USA. It is home, Mooresville, North Carolina, is home to more than 50 auto racing operations, various parts of NASCAR, the Busch Series, the truck racing series. Obviously, this is a huge part of the everyday life of many people there.
I've never sat down and watched a whole race, but I always kept track of where Earnhardt was. My daddy hated him, but he still watched him just to see what in the hell he was doing.
He was a blue-collar guy. To me, he was. I mean, he out there built his own house. I mean, he got dirty for a living, and he didn't mind it. And you don't find a lot of drivers that does that.
What I found was really a scene of despair and disbelief outside of Dale Earnhardt's headquarters, a gleaming two-story steel and glass structure along a rural stretch of highway, North Carolina Highway 136. One day alone, Tuesday, the North Carolina Highway Patrol estimated 10,000 people came by to simply show up and drop off condolence notes, flowers, countless black and white balloons, his team colors, thousands of pieces of Earnhardt merchandise, T-shirts, jackets, hats, many of them with handwritten notes. People brought by Goodyear tires that Earnhardt once raced with. They had been given as souvenirs or as gifts, and they left them at this makeshift memorial. It was really a remarkable sight.
The man must have had a mighty big, strong spirit. Mighty big, strong spirit, because a lot of people are feeling it.
He never got, with all of his success, above his race, and I guess he had lots of country in him.
I heard that for some people in the South, it's as though Elvis Presley died.
Also, people talked about it would be like basketball losing Michael Jordan or golf losing Tiger Woods. Many people viewed Earnhardt as the legend, the icon, a hero, much as many viewed Elvis. A lot of people said to me, Dan, that even for those who don't follow auto racing that closely, most everybody had heard of Dale Earnhardt. They knew he drove the number three black Chevrolet car.
I love racing, and this man was racing. He was the epitome of racing. Even people who didn't know racing knew who Dale Earnhardt was, and I think it's a major hurt for them. It's a major loss for them. Earnhardt set the bar, and everybody else had to leap over it.
Jim Crisula, when you spoke to racing fans, they know that it's a dangerous sport. They probably know that in recent years, the cars tend to bunch up even more closer together. So they expect crashes, don't they?
Sure, and I think, Dan, one of the things that increased the shock, the intensity, and the disbelief was the fact that if you saw the crash, it didn't look that serious. Shortly before Earnhardt's crash, there was a much more serious crash in the race, one car flipping over others. And I think that increased the shock and the disbelief that people had. The crash simply didn't look all that serious. Earnhardt in the past has had much more serious incidents on the racetrack. And, you know, one woman said to me, it was almost as though we looked at him as being immortal, that, you know, he had done it so long, and he had walked away from so many crashes, so many brushes with death that he was immune from anything ever happening to him seriously. And one of the issues for the sport and for the industry now has to be a concern because, Dan, so many people told me that without Earnhardt, auto racing will never be the same. And for them, they don't know if they'll ever sit through another race, watching it on television or going to a racetrack, that the sport simply won't be the same and they won't have the same interest that they did. One woman told me about the fact that she grew up in a NASCAR household. Her father watched all the races, and she said, you know, he really didn't care much about racing, but he wanted to watch just to see, as she put it, what the hell Earnhardt would do. Because, again, he had this image of being you know, so aggressive and pushing the limit and pushing the rules. And many other people said to me as well that he kind of, much as Michael Jordan did in basketball, he raised the bar. In other words, he made other drivers better. They had to be in order to compete with him. He was at one level, and they had to get to that level to compete against him. So in a lot of ways, Earnhardt brought out the best in other drivers.
Jim, what about safety issues? There is some talk of a device that could protect the head and spinal cord of drivers, but Earnhardt and other stars haven't been using it.
That's right. And of course, Dan, this is going to be a whole other issue that's already starting to rage, this issue of safety. In fact, there were some comments during the week from a neurosurgeon at Wake Forest University, a medical center in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. This doctor had treated Dale Earnhardt in the past for some racing injuries, and they, in fact, had talked about this so-called Hans device, this new headgear that they've come up with in the wake of other highly publicized racing deaths in the past year. Adam Petty, the grandson of Richard Petty, the son of a current driver, Kyle Petty. This doctor talked about his discussions with Dale Earnhardt. Earnhardt was, in fact, the only driver who still wore the open face helmet. You know, he wanted to get into the element. He wanted to get in the full feel of auto racing. And that was one of the reasons why, he certainly had no intention, he said, of using this device, which kind of straps in the head. It gives it certainly more support and in a collision prevents the head from snapping forward, which is apparently what killed Dale Earnhardt. But some of the drivers say it's bulky, it's uncomfortable. And one of their big concerns, Dan, is that they feel that it's more cumbersome and will prevent them from being able to climb out of a race car after an accident, say if the car burst into flames or something, that it could impede them in getting out of a car safely. So this is an issue it's a sensitive issue, the safety issue, and through the week, NASCAR officials have been addressing it and saying that they feel the sport has done enough to address the safety issue. You have to ask the question, how many more of these big-name drivers can the sport lose before it just does itself in?
CBS News reporter Jim Krasula in North Carolina, where on Friday, NASCAR revealed that a seatbelt in Dale Earnhardt's car was broken, suggesting he might have survived the crash if the cloth lap belts had held. Coming up next, a cigarette controversy.
Stay with us. The CBS News Weekend Roundup will be right back.
My dad played in the minor leagues for 11 years, so I pretty much grew up on baseball.
Karen's online company specializes in authentic wool minor league baseball caps.
The other day, a guy called me looking for some hard-to-find caps. Kinston Indians, El Paso Diablos, and Fresno Grizzlies.
Carolina League, Texas League, Pacific Coast League. She carries caps for every team from the rookie league to AAA.
He wanted two caps of each because those were the teams his brother had played for and that he was planning a surprise trip for the two of them to catch a game in all three ballparks. I told him no problem. I had two caps for all three in stock, making it the most interesting doubleheader I'd ever seen. My name is Karen. I take people out to the ballgame. Come find me.
And you will at superpages.com from Verizon. The number one online Yellow Pages, where you can also locate tickets, get maps and directions, and make hotel reservations. Superpages.com. More ideas, more fun. Shop on.
When it comes time to buy your new Mercedes-Benz, you're going to want to make the smartest purchase possible. So you want the dealer that has the most give and take in making your new car dream come true. That dealer is Downtown LA Motors Mercedes-Benz, and here's why. Downtown LA Motors Mercedes-Benz is one of the oldest, highest volume dealers in Southern California. Downtown LA Motors Mercedes-Benz has been at the same centrally located, easy to find, fully paid for dealership for over 30 years. That means some of the lowest overhead, and those are savings they pass on to you. The Downtown LA Motors Group stocks cars by the thousands, and that means they sell them by the thousands. With that level of volume selling, Downtown LA Motors Mercedes-Benz has greater flexibility to create an opportunity for your new Mercedes that others just can't match. When you add it all up, low overhead, tremendous volume, selection, and service, the smart decision for your next Mercedes is Downtown LA Motors Mercedes-Benz, 1801 South Figueroa Street at Washington Boulevard, or call 888-933-3400. On the web, it's mbzla.com.
KNX Los Angeles.
Are you safer smoking cigarettes labeled lights? For the CBS News broadcast 60 Minutes 2, correspondent Scott Pelley examined the low-tar myth.
When the federal government began testing cigarettes for tar and nicotine back in 1967, it revolutionized smoking, launching the era of light cigarettes. The idea of a cigarette that is less harmful is so powerful that now more than 80% of all cigarettes sold in America are low-tar brands. What smokers don't know is that the government's low-tar number on the pack has almost nothing to do with how much tar they're inhaling. It only tells you how much tar is being delivered to a smoking machine, not to real smokers. It won't surprise you to hear that some tobacco companies knew this all along. It may surprise you to hear that the federal government knew it too.
When you take that number and put it in an ad that says, this cigarette is a low-yield cigarette, this cigarette's name is light or ultralight, that this cigarette will reduce your exposure to tar, those are lies.
Dr. David Burns has written or edited nearly every U.S. Surgeon General's report on smoking since 1975. He once believed that the government's low tar numbers meant something to smokers, but not anymore.
When a smoker picks up a pack of cigarettes, looks on the label and says 1 milligram of tar, what does that smoker think?
That smoker thinks they're going to get less tar, and because they're getting less tar, that the cigarette is going to have less risk.
What's the truth?
The truth is, it doesn't make any difference what type of cigarette that you smoke.
This is the machine that lights up for the U.S. Federal Trade Commission test. It measures the addictive nicotine and cancer-causing tar. The FTC publishes results brand by brand, and tobacco companies have embraced the test for 35 years as a powerful sales tool.
What's wrong with the FTC test is it doesn't measure what people get.
What do you mean it doesn't measure what people get? I mean, they put it right there on the cigarette pack, 1 milligram of tar. I can take that to the bank.
I don't think so. If you change the way you smoke, if you inhale more deeply, if you draw harder on the cigarette, if you take more puffs, then you change the amount that you get from it.
You know, it's just like light yogurt or light sour cream.
Patricia Henley started smoking in 1962 when she was just 15 years old. She, like millions of other smokers, got worried about the hazards. So 10 years ago, she called Philip Morris, the company that made her Marlboro cigarettes.
She told me exactly what an addict wanted to hear. And that was, well, it hasn't been proven. And then she says, if you're really, truly concerned about it, then you should switch to the lights.
When you started smoking the Marlboro lights, is there anything different about them?
Well, you had to draw more. You know, it was like it didn't have the freeness. You had to inhale a lot stronger.
A lot stronger than the machine. It turns out the machine doesn't smoke like Patricia Henley or most anyone else. It takes a 2-second puff once a minute. The machine, of course, doesn't crave addictive nicotine, but people do. Research shows that people change the way they smoke to get the nicotine they need.
Cut them both, cut the filters off.
William Ferrone was a tobacco industry insider, a research scientist hired by Philip Morris in 1976 to analyze cigarette safety.
Most people who smoke a low-tar cigarette do what we call compensation. They compensate. They will do something to, in fact, get more out of it.
And Philip Morris has known that for nearly 30 years. Physician David Burns, editor of many of the Surgeon General's reports on smoking, says cigarette design led to misleading numbers.
We dramatically underestimated the ability of the tobacco companies to engineer these cigarettes so that they would provide a full dose of tar to people while they provided a trivial dose of tar to the machine.
Engineered to fool the machine?
Yes. Deliberately designed by intent, and they had demonstrated in their own internal studies that the light cigarettes and the regular cigarettes, when smoked by people, delivered exactly the same amount of tar and nicotine.
Philip Morris declined our request for an interview. But on its website, the company says that smokers should not assume that light or ultralight brands are safe or are safer than regular brands. The company also tells smokers that the FTC test numbers do not indicate the actual amount of tar and nicotine they will inhale. If reducing tar means fewer deaths, we wondered what public health experts like Dr. David Burns have seen over the 30-year history of low-tar brands.
With the allegedly low-tar cigarettes coming on the market as long ago as they did, you would assume there would be a great deal less smoking-related disease today.
Absolutely.
That's true?
No. As a matter of fact, it appears that smoking has actually become somewhat more hazardous rather than less hazardous.
More hazardous, researchers believe, because low-tar cigarette smokers tend to inhale more deeply, exposing more of their lungs. It's a heavy irony of light cigarettes when you consider who's buying them.
These are cigarettes that are designed to be marketed to people who are concerned about their health, to provide them an alternative to quitting, and to intercept them on their way to smoking cessation.
What it meant to you was you could keep smoking.
Absolutely.
Without fear of getting sick.
Absolutely, and I had no fear. There wasn't one moment of fear in my mind that I was going to become sick behind this or I would die. That was out of the question.
That was at best naive. After 8 years on light cigarettes, Patricia Henley found herself in the hospital.
They came in the next day, five doctors surrounding my bed, saying that you have less than 4 months to live.
Inoperable lung cancer.
Correct.
Henley started chemotherapy and radiation to fight her cancer, then filed a lawsuit to fight Philip Morris. She won and was awarded $26 million. For now, her cancer is in remission.
I've been targeted by people saying, who do you think you are? How dare you? You should hold responsibility. I do hold that responsibility because I'm the one that's going to die.
Even the U.S. Surgeon General was taken in by the low-tar myth. In 1981, the Surgeon General's report on smoking said low-tar cigarettes might be less risky. It was a report edited by Dr. David Burns.
We were way behind the curve. We didn't do enough research, and we should have been able to give better advice, and we didn't. And a lot of people paid the price for our error.
For the last 2 years, Dr. Burns has been leading a government review of the Federal Trade Commission test. The findings are expected this spring.
CBS News correspondent Scott Pelley of the CBS News broadcast, 60 Minutes 2.
You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup, the news of the week and the correspondents who covered it on the CBS Radio Network.
If your pots and pans are spending a lot more time collecting water than cooking, you should call us at Champion Roofs. Now, I can tell you that we have all the top roofing products, including the Monier Cedar Light Roofing System. I can tell you about our competitive prices, or the fact that we've got over 100 roofing pros on staff. But what really matters is who we are. You see, Champion's been in business for over 45 years, and we expect to be in business for at least 45 more. And the only way we can do this is by making your satisfaction our top priority. We'll only sell you a quality product at a fair price, professionally installed, and with my personal guarantee to be 100% satisfied with your Champion roof. Call us at 800-23-CHAMP for a free estimate. Mention KNX, and we'll give you an attic ventilation system worth several hundred dollars absolutely free with your new roof. This will conserve energy and reduce your bills. Call Champion Roofs today, 800-232-4267. Visit our website, championroofs.com. And remember, folks, for a hole in your roof or a whole new roof, 800-23-CHAMP.
Hi, I'm Vicky, and I'm asking you to donate your car. No, not to me. I don't even drive yet. Donate your car to the Cancer Fund of America, helping cancer patients since 1983. The Cancer Fund helps kids like me and adults who have a lot more to worry about than driving or extra cars in the garage. The Cancer Fund does it all for you, too. They pick up your car for free, do all the DMV and smog papers, and you get a tax deduction, too.
Fair market value, per the IRS.
Right, Mom. The Cancer Fund wants your car even if it doesn't run.
In most cases. When you donate to the Cancer Fund of America, you help 20,000 patients directly and through healthcare groups nationwide.
Cancer's terrible, and even your old car can help a lot. Please call today.
Call 800-321-3023. Donated cars, trucks, boats, lots, and real estate are all tax deductible. 800-321-3023 for free pickup. 800-321-3023.
And help cancer patients feel better.
Check with your tax advisor or paid announcement.
This is KNX Los Angeles.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Stories that matter with the inside knowledge of the correspondents who cover them. Once again, here's CBS News national correspondent Dan Rabin.
What happens when the informant in a government investigation turns out to be crazy, unreliable? That is one of the questions that comes to mind from reading The Informant. It's a new book by Kurt Eichenwald, a reporter for the New York Times, joining us here in the studio at CBS News Washington. And it's the product, obviously, of a lot of investigation into a scandal at Archer Daniels Midland. The company calls itself Supermarket to the World, a well-known agricultural products company. The scandal was known. I assume you covered it for the New York Times.
Right, I did. And it was so obvious to me that this was a story with so many layers.
You decided to focus on the government informant, the guy who went around taping other people in the company, try to help the FBI establish there was price fixing. His name, Mark Whitaker?
Mark Whitaker.
When I said the informant was kind of crazy, is that fair?
This is a fairly disturbed man. I mean, this is a fellow who was put into a mental hospital twice at the end. What you had was a circumstance where the government was conducting an investigation of this incredibly politically powerful company. I mean, this is a company known very well here in the halls of Washington.
Yeah.
And they were relying on this individual, Mark Whitaker, not realizing that the whole time he was cooperating in their investigation, he was also gradually losing his mind.
And also embezzling. I mean, later it was found that he continued to lie, to steal millions of dollars. And what was the deal? He was immunized from prosecution as long as he admitted everything he had done. But he didn't.
He didn't. I mean, what was so funny here? I mean, I actually don't want people to get confused. This is not a story where poor ADM, that they had this serial lying embezzler telling lies about them. What was so bizarre is Whitaker was telling these crazy stories about international conspiracies, about corporate espionage using prostitutes, about thefts of microbes from competitors. All that was true. It was really going on. Everything he was alleging was really going on. It's just simultaneous to that, he was embezzling $9 million through a bogus invoice plan, laundering the money through the Cayman Islands, Switzerland, Hong Kong. So you had a person with very many different faces, but he was only showing them one at a time.
Where is he now?
He is a resident of the Edgefield, South Carolina Federal Prison.
And you spoke to him there?
Yes. I've met with him several times there.
So he was willing to speak to you, too. Is he proud? Is he ashamed? What is he like now?
Mark Whitaker is a fellow who, in truth, has not been dealt with very well, either by the system, by journalism, by all of us. He was a fellow who was mentally disturbed. As a result, whenever he was presented with a circumstance about, you know, what choice to make, you know, you go up to a criminal and say, we've got you, make a deal, a criminal will make the rational decision and make a deal. Whitaker did not. He would always keep going thinking he could outsmart the FBI.
He had this really senior job in ADM, in charge of the division that made a chemical called lysine, which is apparently used to fatten chickens, and it's a multi-billion dollar industry. So we've talked about him being disturbed, but he had a very important job in the company.
It wasn't like he walked around wearing a clown suit and you know, singing about being Napoleon. I mean,
this to be an effective businessman in his 30s.
He was a very effective businessman. What he's diagnosed with is a bipolar condition, commonly known as manic depression. I mean, and this is a fellow who had an endless amount of energy, and he put it into his job. He put it into his cooperation to expose the conspiracies at this company, and he put it into his embezzling. And now that he is in prison, what he said to me is that I basically guided him to a point where he is able to finally admit the truth, to acknowledge the things that he did. And he does admit everything in this book.
You guided him? Because what did the FBI and the prosecutors do with him? Were they able to use his testimony? They used his tapes?
They were able to use his tapes. You got to bear in mind, what they didn't find out about his embezzling until after the raids on ADM. And when they found out on his embezzling, Mark Whitaker went from the role of cooperating witness to the role of target. There was not a let's bring Whitaker around and make sure he does the right thing. There was no real sense of protection for him. I didn't care where the truth was, but I was interested in the truth. And there are a lot of people who simply could not accept that whatever the evidence proved, in this case, that Whitaker had in fact embezzled this money, unless Whitaker himself admitted it. And so I went down to the federal prison and basically confronted him with all the evidence that what he had done was simply steal from this company. He tried to maintain that the company had secretly given him the money as a benefit for his participation in other crimes. After some time of going through it, he finally sat back and said, the only person I've told this to is my wife, but I'll tell you. And then he acknowledged the fact that he had, in fact, embezzled the money.
A fascinating personal tale. You tell even of conversations between Whitaker and his wife, Whitaker and his gardener. At one point, he was showing off a little device he had for recording. What do you say? Don't call me 007.
He said, call me 014. And the gardener says, why 014? He says, because I'm twice as smart as 007.
Ah, there he was bragging at one point. But what about the company itself? It was found guilty, or a couple of its executives were?
ADM pleaded guilty to price fixing in two different products. Products that many of us purchase every day. Right now I have a soda right here. It has citric acid in it, and that's one of the products they were fixing the prices on. The two of its executives were convicted of price fixing. But one of the things that's clear in this case is ADM, there were hundreds of hours of FBI tapes that were recorded. Most of those tapes have never been made public. I obtained them for this book. They're still not publicly available. And what is very clear from these tapes, which are recounted in The Informant, is that this is a corrupt company. This is a company that engaged in price fixing. This is a company that whose executives knowingly violated campaign finance laws. This is a company that engaged in corporate espionage. This is a company that literally in the early 1990s was out of control.
But price fixing always costs consumers. Any estimate as to what that might have cost? I assume consumers around the globe.
Every product that we've been buying every week when we go to the grocery store, we've been paying more for than we would have otherwise, but for that crime. The victims are you, me, everyone listening to this broadcast. And just for one product, lysine, an amino acid used to fatten up chickens and pigs. I mean, not something we are buying directly, not really a something that affects us a lot. We paid $80 million in illicit profits to ADM.
That's Kurt Eichenwald of the New York Times. He's the author of a new book, The Informant. It's published by Broadway Books.
Stay with us. The CBS News Weekend Roundup will be right back.
Homeowners, Homeworld 2001, California's leading three-day home improvement show, is happening right now indoors at Edison International Field of Anaheim. See the latest in decorating, remodeling, and home design. The finest home improvement products, services, and contractors at more than 400 booths. Shop early for discounts on roofing, room additions, second stories, kitchens, baths, doors, floors, and more. Save on every home improvement need. Learn how to turn any room into an art masterpiece. Attend insulation seminars and get the latest information on energy financing and rebates from Southern California Gas Company. Plus, Home Depot's all-new do-it-yourself workshops and Kids Fun Clinics. Enter to win a $1,200 waterless cookware set. No purchase required. Homeworld 2001 is sponsored by The Register and Home Depot. Discount coupons in local newspapers and Home Depot stores. Doors open today until 8, Sunday 10 to 6. That's Homeworld 2001 this weekend, indoors at Edison International Field of Anaheim. Don't miss the Anaheim Home Improvement Show.
This conversation could be happening to thousands of you who desire a real luxury car. See if it rings a bell.
I love that automobile. It's pure elegance and it drives like a dream.
I know, honey. Handles like a sports car. It's powerful.
I really want one.
I'd love you to have one, but at $30,000, our monthly payment for a new Acura TL four-door luxury sports sedan, easily $500 a month. We'll just have to wait a little longer, dear. I don't think so.
Oh?
Really? Not after you hear this Acura TL offer from Browning Cerritos Acura. $299 a month for 36 months. The new 2001 luxury equipped four-door Acura TL. Fine leather interior, power sunroof, expensive five-speaker Bose stereo. There's a CD player, full power, 225 horsepower, $299 a month plus tax and license when you lease it from Cerritos Acura. How's $299 a month fit your budget?
Quite nicely.
Now that I can afford, no problem. So if you want a new 2001 luxury-equipped Acura TL for as little as $299 a month, you get off the 605 at famous Cerritos Auto Square and it's waiting for you. So let me ask you, is Cerritos Acura the best? Boy, I guess.
Total drive off $4,000 plus $325 security deposit on approved credit. 12,000 miles per year, 15 cents per excess mile. Offer expires 2/28.
This is KNX 1070, Los Angeles.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Stories that matter with the inside knowledge of the correspondents who cover them. Once again, here's CBS News national correspondent Dan Rabib.
The first European leader to meet President George W. Bush is Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair. Let's turn to London and CBS News senior European correspondent Tom Fenton. Blair, of course, is a young, dynamic leader who was very friendly with Bill Clinton. So what does that mean? He won't necessarily be getting along with George W. Bush for these next years?
Well, of course, Downing Street claims that's not the case, but certainly he will have a hard time establishing the same sort of relationship he had with President Clinton. The two were really soulmates. They both believed in the so-called third way left-of-center politics, and it's not going to be easy to establish the same sort of rapport.
But barely a week before this summit of Mr. Bush and Prime Minister Blair, there was some important Anglo-U.S. cooperation against Iraq, the joint bombing attack on the Iraqi facilities near Baghdad.
Yes, and Britain was the only country supporting the United States in that action. Britain provided some of the aircraft, but more importantly, Britain provided moral support.
What's behind Tony Blair being so different, standing with the U.S. on this?
Because Britain has always cherished what it calls the special relationship, which, as we all know, is something of a myth. It was a special relationship back in the days of Winston Churchill and President Roosevelt. But since then, it's been more of a political myth than a reality. However, Britain sees itself as a bridge between Europe and the United States and cherishes this so-called relationship because it gives it a stature that it might not otherwise have.
In London, senior European correspondent for CBS News, Tom Fenton.
Well, we used to play when we were three. How about a kiss for your cousin?
At the Grammy Awards in Los Angeles, Steely Dan won their first Grammy ever. In fact, three of them, including the big prize, Best Album of the Year for Two Against Nature.
I pretended to be reading the
Time Magazine entertainment correspondent Lisa Carlin, you were at the Grammy, so it was Steely Dan, those two guys over the age of 50, and not the highly controversial young rap star Marshall Mathers, better known as Eminem, who won the really big prize, Lisa.
Dan, it was actually surprising to people who were at the show because the whole night everyone seemed to be talking about Eminem. Jon Stewart was joking about him. Other artists were mentioning him both on stage and backstage. And then, of course, we had that kind of emotional presentation of the Eminem song Stand with Elton John. And then comes the Best Album Prize, and you sort of think that he's going to say the Marshall Mathers LP, Eminem. So everybody, at least in the press room, kind of gasped when Steely Dan won. This is really far from Steely Dan's best music, Two Against Nature. You know, it's a good album, but really their most significant work was a while ago. But there was this feeling, the Grammys often do this, of a lifetime achievement honor. A couple of years ago, Bob Dylan won Album of the Year for an excellent album. But again, at that time, there was this feeling, you know, we may have missed you in the height of your career, but we haven't forgotten you, and now we're going to take the time to recognize you.
Eminem did win three of the four Grammys he was nominated for in rap categories.
I want to thank everybody who could look past the controversy or whatever and see the album for what it was and also for what it isn't.
Anyways, I hope you get...
And the last live act of the night in the CBS telecast was the much-awaited duet, supposed gay basher Eminem, with openly gay Elton John on a keyboard. What was that like, Lisa?
A little bit emotional. I think Eminem got a chance on Grammy night to rethink his image. He certainly was debated. His lyrics and his whole presentation was debated for a full week in newspapers all across the country. You had a lot of music critics saying, listen, this guy, you know, is kind of wild with his lyrics. He's writing from some open psychological wound, but he's a really excellent musician. And I think that night you saw Eminem seeming kind of humbled. At the end of that duet with Elton John, they hugged in a kind of brotherly hug. And I think all of it was a statement. Elton John, you know, looking for the credibility that could brush off from the very hip Eminem with a younger audience. And Eminem perhaps saying, you know, maybe open your minds to me. I think we may see a different Eminem when his new album comes out in a few months.
How about a few fashion notes? I know last year it was Jennifer Lopez who barely wore a dress. I mean, she wasn't covered much. This year it was Toni Braxton who said,
well, it's been a double stick tape night.
I mean, that's what you have to do in Hollywood. It's a sexy evening.
Well, it is. Oh, definitely. I mean, everybody was bearing it at the Grammys this year. But I think the thing that was striking, though, is Jennifer Lopez, although she was hardly wearing anything a year ago, looked really beautiful. And even now, there were pictures in the paper of her, you know, when they were looking at what people wore this year, there beside it, the picture of her from last year, because it made such an impression. Toni Braxton, I thought, just looked kind of cheesy. It didn't work for me. What was interesting is when she turned sideways, what she was wearing kind of vanished altogether. Interestingly, Jennifer Lopez, though she was nominated in one category this year, didn't attend. Maybe, Dan, she couldn't find just the right thing to wear.
That often is a problem. Now, back to music. The Irish rockers, the band U2, one member of the band, The Edge, said,
on a personal level, this century has been going so well for us.
This century isn't very old, but how did U2 do?
Oh, U2 did great. I mean, this is, again, one of the things you saw were a lot of baby boomers from the Recording Academy voting this year. I think that was partly responsible for the Steely Dan win and for U2, a band that's been around since the early 80s. And they do have an excellent new album out, which was not eligible for Best New Album because of the time that it came out. It missed the eligibility period. We could see it win in 2002. But their song Beautiful Day won Record and Song of the Year. They did a great job performing it at the Grammys. And I think everybody, even the younger folks that were there, were happy to see them do so well.
There at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, Macy Gray made quite an impression. Interesting singer. She wasn't wearing one of those, you know, bare midriff dresses.
No. She handles things a little bit differently. She is kind of a wild performer, though, Macy Gray. And something that felt like poetic justice. A year ago, she lost the Best New Artist Grammy to Christina Aguilera. This year, she was nominated against Christina Aguilera, I think, for pop female vocalist, and she won that category. So that felt good.
Who was the Best New Artist this year?
A woman named Shelby Lynn, who had recorded a number of albums in Nashville, but she left Nashville really frustrated, saying, this is not the sound that I'm looking for. I don't want to be, you know, sort of a prepackaged country act. She spent a couple years living in Alabama and wrote a beautiful, soulful album. Her record is really that place where country music meets soul. It's called I Am Shelby Lynn.
Why can't you be? Why can't you be?
I think it was the best of the nominees in the New Artist category, and I was thrilled.
Time Magazine entertainment correspondent Lisa Carlin, thanks very much. Speaking of Sheryl Crow, backstage she had this comment, you know, basically about Eminem and controversy.
The next record is chocked full of hits, lots of profanity, lots of gay bashing, a lot of anti-women statements, and I think it's going to be huge.
Big hits, big news. We'll be back with that and more next week. I'm Dan Revive.
You've been listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This broadcast is produced in the Washington Bureau of CBS News. The program is produced by Howard Arenstein, Greg Warner, and John Harchin. This is the CBS Radio Network.